Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Police Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Got a great show for you today. We've got a special guest, a woman named Kelly Wintz, who has taken the mission of changing the perception of police on her own shoulders. And she's doing a hell of a job. She's going to be my guest. We'll be talking about some current events in law enforcement, of course, and a police story towards the end of the show. Before we even get started, I want to talk to you about. I read a letter today. It was a letter from the daughter of two Chicago police officers, and I was really moved by this letter. And I thought that I would share it with you. It's from a young daughter, and she says this: Midnight strikes, and you're still not home from work. As I lay in bed, I think to myself whether or not you'll ever come back to me. I was awoken by the sunlight that peeks through my bedroom window. That's when I hear your voice telling me it's time to wake up. Unlike any other teenager who would do anything to stay in bed, I leap out of bed because I'm rejoicing that you made it home safely. On the mornings you aren't home, I worry, but I taught myself to understand that you have to work extra hours to support our family. Having to tell my siblings a white lie to reassure them not to worry and that you're okay, even though I don't know for sure. That's been the hardest part. What is it like to live your life wondering whether or not your parents will be home safely the next morning? I'm the daughter of not one, but two Chicago police officers. I was taught to have courage and resilience, for there would be many days and nights that I wouldn't see my parents because they were out fighting crime on the dangerous streets of Chicago. Whether they were working in District 16 or District 11, the worry never vanished. While I let you borrow my parents to keep you safe, I live a life of constant worry that my parents might not return home one day. However, despite my worry, there is this strange pride to being a policeman or a policewoman's daughter. My parents work hard. They work long hours to protect the city of Chicago. The situations they see on a daily basis would probably make you sick to your stomach in an instant. Dealing with homicides, gang activity, and narcotics, the Chicago police have to be quick on their feet and ready for the unexpected. Now, there's a lot of talk about police brutality and the horrifying situations that have appeared more recently. The police officers are the good guys. They are supposed to promote hope, not fear. They work hard to keep you safe every day from the violent world that surrounds us. Today's media enhances police brutality and makes it unsafe for our officers because it makes them targets. The more police brutality talk arises, the more likely I find it harder to live knowing that my parents are in more danger than they've ever been in before. These days, just wearing the uniform can put their lives at risk. There's not one right way to deal with having parents as police officers. Instead of living in fear for them, I've learned to have faith that they will return home safely the next day. To cope with the anxiety, I found it helpful to find ways to help my parents in any way possible, whether it's cleaning around the house or grocery shopping. By doing so, it gives me the relief of knowing that I've done something to give back to my parents. I'm proud to have such tenacious parents that are brave enough to risk their lives for people who don't recognize the amount of hard work the Chicago police have to do. The Chicago police are some of the most hardworking officers in the world due to the petrifying violence our city is facing. The courage and strength my parents possess taught me not to be afraid anymore, but to be proud and brave. I am no longer discouraged, for I am the daughter of the Chicago police. Blue lives matter too. Now that was a letter that I saw. It's anonymous, but I think it hits so much to the point about the people that are close to police officers. You see, it's not just the officers themselves, it's their families that are also sacrificing. And sacrificing in ways that many people don't realize. So that letter really hit home to me. And, you know, I'm now going to give you my view from the blue. What's going on in the world of policing today? And I got to tell you, I'm pissed off. I saw some headlines today which really, really got to me. The headline today was, De Blasio unveils no bail plan for low-level crimes, even felonies. So in other words, thousands of criminal suspects will be sprung without bail under this plan that De Blasio, the mayor of New York, is now unveiling. It's going to cost millions and millions of dollars, and it will let thousands of defendants go that will not have to pay bail. So what? Let me guess what their rate of people not going to court is going to be. It's going to be astronomical. But get this. It's okay, because part of the plan is that the court will text. Yes, you heard me right. The court will text the offender and let him know that it's time to go to court. Now, I don't know about you, but I live in the real world, not some make-believe world of rainbows and unicorns, which Mayor de Blasio apparently believes that is part of New York City. But it goes beyond this. And let me tell you where else it goes. The thought of leaving offenders out on the streets. You know, I was a cop for 30-some years. Recently, just a couple days ago, saw President Bill Clinton, who I'm not a huge fan of, but he was confronted by protesters from Black Lives Matter who were protesting his crime bill back in the 80s, which enhanced sentences for gang members and crack dealers. And they were protesting. And he actually got up and told it like it was, that back in those days, those crack dealers were destroying the black community. And the level of violence was unmatched at any time in history. So the Justice Department and Congress and the president, they put forth this crime bill, which really made some heavy sentencing for gang members and for the crack cocaine. And you know what? It worked. It actually brought the crime level down to historic lows, which is what we have been seeing over the last few years. Was here's the deal. You take offenders, you take violent offenders, and you put them in prison for extended periods of time. You know what happens? They don't commit crimes. Well, that's all about to change, my friends. That's about to change because of President Obama, who has just released 6,000 offenders from the federal prisons onto the streets of this country, with the plans to, in the next few years, unleash about 46,000 federal prisoners on the unsuspecting American public. Now, as a police officer, I know what is going to happen. I can forecast this. It's going to be devastating for especially the major metropolitan areas, because when these hardened criminals come back, they aren't going to go work for IBM. They're not going to go get useful jobs. They're going to go back to the only thing that they know, and that's the life of crime. And heaven knows, all we have to do is look at Chicago to see what the gang crime rate is doing there, a homicide rate that's absolutely unprecedented. Well, now we're going to bring back a whole batch more of hardened criminals, and we're going to stick them back onto the streets, back to the gangs, and we are going to see blood running through the streets of this country. And then, if that wasn't enough, that insane governor in California, Jerry Brown, he's now putting forth a plan that's going to release an early release now of 40,000 more prisoners. 40,000 more prisoners. And then it's going to give the Department of Corrections unlimited power to grant early release for another 80,000 prisoners, including those who committed rape and murder and child molestation. Now, there have been laws in effect that have sentencing guidelines, and he's going to throw everything out. That's his plan, is to throw out all of the constitutional amendment, or he's actually trying to create a constitutional amendment that will overturn four decades of carefully crafted sentencing laws. It will make it virtually impossible to prosecute juvenile murderers and rapists as adults. Now, Jerry Brown has already decriminalized so many felony crimes, including narcotics offenses and some burglaries as well. So you get your car broken into, you can forget any police investigation because it's not even a crime, it's a misdemeanor. You add that to President Obama's plan to release 46,000 federal prisoners, Mayor de Blasio basically giving carte blanche to every low-level criminal in New York, and now Jerry Brown working his little magic for spreading his little pixie dust to decrease the population of the prisons in California. And you have a recipe for disaster. And who's going to pay this price? It's going to be the citizens who are the victims of these crimes, the citizens who will be preyed upon by these predators, and it's going to be the police who are on the front line doing combat and not getting the support of their politicians, their police departments, and their government. And that's my view from the blue. Special guest to present to you today. Her name is Kelly Wintz, and she is the founder of UnitedForBlue.org. This is a great organization. She created this as a result of all of the anti-police rhetoric and violence towards police officers, and she has created this organization that has, in the last year, become really active in helping to shape the narrative of the reality of the hearts that beat behind the badges of police officers. She's even had a march in Washington that included over 1,000 people to demonstrate solidarity with the police. So welcome to our guest, Kelly Wintz. Kelly, thanks so much for being on Police Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you are the organizer and creator of UnitedForBlue.org.
And, that's correct.
And this is an organization that that you created because you felt that there was a time and a place to be supportive of law enforcement officers. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I actually started it with my co-founder, Bobby Padgett. So we started it together. Yes.
Were there any specific reasons that caused you to create this?
Back in December 20th, when the two officers in New York, Officer Wen Liu and Rafael Ramos, were shot and killed, I remember standing in my living room, decorating my Christmas tree, and I had enough. I just couldn't take the silence anymore, and I couldn't take the outrage towards our law enforcement officers. And I just had to reach out and do something. I couldn't be silent anymore.
I hear you. I understand that. So it was the death of those two officers was kind of like the pivotal moment for you.
It really was. You know, it had been building up for a long time. I went back looking at my Facebook post over the last couple of years, and it's been a few years that the respect level for our law enforcement officers has dropped. You know, it used to be kids wanted to be law enforcement officers when they grew up. They wanted to be the police, and now they fear them or they shy away from them. And our law enforcement officers are feeling defeated. I'd watch my husband come home feeling defeated, not loving what he did anymore. It's not that he didn't want to do it because it's in his blood. It was that they didn't appreciate him. You drive down the road, they spit on you. They throw bricks at you. You know, they break your windows. They call you names. They weren't feeling appreciated. And I had just had enough. And I said, we need to get out there and let them know we appreciate them. We need to thank them. And that's what this is about.
So you come from a law enforcement family.
I do, yes. My brother had 37 years in law enforcement. I actually have a stepbrother, too, that he was Border Patrol and became a special agent. And he was, of course, much older than I was. But I was brought up around law enforcement and fire. And that's what I knew. You know, that's what I grew up around.
Right. And being married to a law enforcement officer, you see firsthand how the job has affected him. And all the subtle nuances that have taken place probably in his personality during his time, especially during the last year or so.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I met my husband. We've been married 26 years, gone on 27 years, and he was military police for 20 years. And then he retired, and his dream, the day I met him, he told me he was going to retire and become a law enforcement officer. And he loved it. And he would get so excited putting on the uniform, going to work. And he still does. Don't get me wrong. He absolutely loves his job. But again, it's the respect levels. He comes home and he doesn't want to turn the computer on half the time because of the fact that every other day a law enforcement officer is shot and killed or something has happened. He's been beaten or just, you know, riots happening because an officer is doing his job and the community is going against them.
Right, exactly. So when you saw all of these changes taking place towards law enforcement and also the frustration that your husband was feeling,
right. This
was what caused you to create this organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely.
Let's talk about the organization. It's United for Blue.
That's correct.
And it is a 501c3, a non-for-profit organization.
Yes, that
and,
is correct.
And you've done some pretty amazing stuff over this very short period of time that you've been doing this. Why don't you talk about some of the successes that you have had?
We wanted to say thank you to our law enforcement officers. So we held a rally in Washington, D.C., and that was January 17th of 2015. Thought it was going to be a one-time thing. Craig Floyd came out to speak. We started National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. We marched to the West Terrace of the Capitol, and we had over 1,000 people come out. And like I said, thought it was going to be a one-time thing, and Craig Floyd said, see you next year. Terrence Gaynor said, see you next year. So at that point, that is when we decided we need to do more. So from there, we held two other rallies, one in Annapolis and one in Richmond. The one in Annapolis, we actually had planned long before the riots in Baltimore. We had already had our permits in place. It had nothing to do with that at the time. And then the riots happened. And we had the opportunity to take food drops down to the officers in Baltimore. And we thought, and when I say we, Bobby Padgett and I, thought that we were just going to go and we were going to drop the food off at a centralized location. And we got down there and they asked us if we would take the food to the front lines, to take it to Pensacola North, right where the rioting was going on. And it was a no-brainer. It was 6 o'clock at night. Our officers needed the food there. And we did. And let me tell you, this is one of the things that drives me is people don't understand. They don't understand who our officers are. We turned the corner, and these officers, they were there in riot gear, and the protesters were right there yelling and screaming at them, and they saw us turn the corner, and the smiles on their face. They were so appreciative that we were bringing them things, not just water, but juice and fruit and, you know, protein bars. We were bringing them stuff that they needed and wanted and hadn't had in days. And I had an officer say, you know, you don't know how bad I wanted an orange. People don't think of that. You know, we took the food inside and we brought with us thank you cards from elementary school children, just wanting to say thank you to the officers for what they were doing. And we handed them out, and we had officers drop to their knees in tears.
I can imagine.
Grabbing other officers saying, look, they care. These kids care. And people don't see that side of them.
That's an amazing story. That must have touched you in ways that you probably never even thought you would feel.
I cry every time I think of it because you don't think of that stuff. I mean, my husband's an officer, and even there's times I don't even think of that, you know, that they're out there for hours on end, days on end, and they have people screaming at them, throwing bottles at them, you know, rocks at them. And all they can think of is these people don't care. We're protecting them and they don't care. And people need to know our officers, they're human too. They have families. I have soon to be 8 grandbabies. And my husband, they would be lost without him. They would absolutely be lost without their papa. You know, my kids would be lost without them. Imagine the dads. I mean, we've lost 15 officers to gunfire this year.
Unfortunately, that turned into 16 today.
Today, yeah.
Because the officer that was shot during a SWAT standoff in Columbus, Ohio, just passed away.
Passed away, yeah. And people don't get that. These are families that are shattered. You know, my friend Rebecca Jones, her husband is Brian Jones, who was killed in line of duty 2 years ago in Norfolk. She has 3 kids. They're not going to know their dad. Their dad is going to be the memorial that's on the street to them. You know, it's going to be a memory. And people don't get that. They're just like them, except they go out and they protect you no matter who you are, no matter what you do. Our officers put on their vests, put on their guns, and they protect you. That's the difference. They run into the danger. And you guys run away. Everybody else runs away. So we need them. You know, we need them, and people don't understand that. They cry just like you and I cry. You know, that's what they do. They laugh. You know, they have family.
Those police officers down in Baltimore with just the small step of bringing them food, and then. But tell me more about the cards that the elementary school children prepared. Whose idea was that?
We asked. We went to the schools and we asked them if they could send thank you cards.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and we talked to them, and that's one of our missions. So one of our missions is we get into the schools and we work with the elementary school children, with the officers. We started a pen pal program with the officers where they write back and forth to the children once a month. But, you know, the kids wanted to do this. This is something that the kids wanted to do. They weren't forced to do this. They were excited about it.
You know, I'm sure.
They wanted to help these officers. And, you know, some of the cards were just so cute. You know, a lot of them would say, stay safe, you know. And then other ones were, you know, we hope you get food, you know. And don't forget to change your socks, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, they were really cute. But the kids, they don't know any better. You know, they know what they're taught.
Right. And by creating even a symbolic relationship for the preparation of the greeting cards, mm-hmm. knowing that they have done something nice for someone, especially right. a police officer, that can have a lasting effect on the way that they view the police in the future.
It can. And, you know, what I tell everybody is if we touch one child, if we get to one child and that child grows up knowing that that officer is the good guy and maybe becomes an officer later down the line, we've done our job. Do we want to affect all of them? Absolutely. But they go home and they learn different things when they go home.
Yeah, exactly.
And our thing is they have to know that our officers are the good guys because, God forbid, what if they ever need an officer? What if they're lost? Who are their parents telling them to go to? If they're telling them that the officers are the bad guys, who are they telling them to go to if they get lost or if they need help? Are they going to tell them to go to the officer who's the bad guy? No. Are you going to tell them to go to some stranger on the street who may end up taking your child? I'm pretty darn sure that I would rather have my child go to the officer. on the street.
That's right.
What they need to know. They need to know that the officers are the good guys, and they're the ones you call and you go to when you need them.
You couldn't have put it any better. That is unfortunately the that becomes taken from the home where we would hope that message would be drilled into the children, but sometimes that is not the case.
No, and you are absolutely correct. And that's one of the reasons we held a cops and kids event in October. It's our first one. Remember, we've been a 501 since September.
Right.
So we actually just started since January. So we held a Cops and Kids Day event in Prince George's County in October, and we had helicopter demos, we had canine demos. You know, the officers were out there playing ball with the kids. And
oh, that must have been great.
It was, you know, it was fantastic. We had about 300, maybe a little over 300 children come out.
Wow, that's a lot of kids.
It is a lot of kids, and their families. And the parents got to interact too. You know, when we had the guys doing the canine demos with the kids, the parents were there, and they got to play with the dogs. They got to interact with the canines, and they got to interact with the officers. And that's important, because right there, they also see another side of the officers. And again, it's one step at a time. If we get to one family, and they go home and say, you know what, these officers were pretty cool that we met today, you know? It was really cool. The kids had fun.
Absolutely. How did you manage to get that many kids to this event?
Oh my! So we pushed it. Yeah, you know, we had a lot of help. We had the event at the Fraternal Order of Police 89. They loaned us their field, and they helped us get the helicopter out there. And we actually, it wasn't just a Maryland event. We had officers come out from D.C. and Virginia along with Maryland. So Capitol Police came out, Park Police came out with their mounted division, D.C., MPD come out and do demos. And we just pushed it. We pushed it on social media. We got out to the churches. We got out to the schools, and we advertised it.
That's awesome. Did any people show up that you did not expect would? That is, people that you thought would not have an interest. Did any people come up?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the children were from the urban areas. That's what we targeted. So that was our demographics. It was open to any of the public, but we reached out to more of the urban areas, and they all came. I mean, we were so satisfied, so pleased with our turnout, and we were very surprised, especially because it was a rain date. Our original date was rained out, and we had said we weren't going to do a rain date, but we decided at the last minute because there was an opening on the field, so we pushed it. So there was a lot of people that we sat back and went, wow, they came. You know, it was a free day. We didn't charge for anything. They came in. They had hot dogs and food. Mission Barbecue donated. And then, you know, the FOPs helped us out with some of the food and stuff. But we, everything was free to them. And they had a good time, and they left with a great impression. We had the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial come out, and they set up the table, and we just made a fun day of it. So, yeah, we had a lot of kids come out that we thought, wow, we didn't know. And I can tell you, one of the things along our journey, and this may be, you know, off subject a little bit, is we have not had any negativity towards us. Which is
great.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Our first, I kind of take that back. Our first rally, we had one protester who held a sign up walking back and forth on the West Terrace silently. He was very quiet. And then our police wives surrounded him with their signs very quietly. And he laughed and he walked away. That is the only thing that has.
Even during your march, in Washington, there was no negativity?
No negativity. We have not received any negativity, especially this last march. You know, we just held our last rally, and you know, we didn't have any negativity. We had two NFL players come out. We had Clinton Portis from the Redskins come out, and we had Jack Brewer, who is retired Minnesota Vikings. He came out, and nobody said anything against us. There were no protesters there, and nobody yelling on the streets. People would blow their horns and wave. People were standing on the corners clapping as we walked by.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear.
Yeah, we have really been blessed.
Let me ask you this. What is your next event going to be?
Our next big event is going to be our Cops and Kids, and that's going to be in October. We are primarily focusing on our rally to make it bigger every year. And then the Cops and Kids, that's our two big events. Then we do things in between. Like we'll do at Christmas time, we take Christmas presents and food to families within the area. We actually service the DMV area, Maryland, DC, and Virginia. So we get down into Richmond and we get down, you know, into DC. So we'll do things like that throughout the year. And then we work on educational things like our Pen Pal program. We also go out and we feed the homeless up in Maryland. There are people living in tents. So we get the officers together with the Arnold House and United for Blue, and they cook meals and they take the food out into the tents where the people are living, the families are living.
Wow, you're doing a lot. Do you have another march planned?
We do not at this moment. I am currently working with some of the people from Philadelphia, the FOP, so we'd like to try to get something started. We don't have a date, but we are in the process of working on that one.
That's great. Now, what is your website? Is unitedforblue.org, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
How can my listeners help you?
First, by thanking officers. We need you to get out there and thank officers, but we also need donations. We need donations to be able to get out into the public and do our events and to be able to do our education with children within the schools and to get their needs to them.
And of course, you are a 501c3, so
yes.
That all of the donations that are made to you are tax deductible.
They are tax deductible. Yes, sir. They are tax deductible. And I can tell you, one of the things that we just recently did is Officer Ja'Kai Colson,
yes,
from Prince George's County, when he was shot and killed, we're friends with the FOP and a lot of the officers there. Our Vice President Bobby Padgett, her husband is Prince George's County. We told them anything they needed to let us know. Well, they called us and they said they needed food. They needed food for the officers that night that Officer Colson was killed. We made phone calls, we worked our magic, and we fed the officers for over a week.
That's amazing.
We gave them enough food for over a week. And we helped. We helped with the organization of the repass, with the volunteers and the food and everything for that, too. But that's just some of the other things that we do. That's kind of in the background that a lot of people don't see, you know.
Well, it sounds to me like you have truly made a difference, and you are continuing to make a difference in forming opinions about law enforcement and showing the realities that these men and women have tremendous hearts. And that they enjoy helping others. That's part of the job. And it is time to appreciate those men and women in law enforcement.
You know, it really is. And you know, people don't understand that. You know, I had the honor of meeting the wives from Harford County. I met the family of Ashley Gwinden. I met the family of Ja'Kai Colson. And every one of them say the same thing, that they gave back. Ashley Gwinden works soup kitchens. She worked the animal shelters. You know, they give back to the communities. It's not just them going to work, but it's in their hearts. They give back. They care about the communities. And we need to thank them for that. We need to know that, you know, it's not just a job. This is their life. This is their blood. And they care.
And I don't think that anyone could ask anything more of a person or an organization. You know, Kelly Wentz, you are a personal hero.
No. It's our men and women in blue that are the heroes.
Well, you know what? You're making a difference in their lives. Thank you so much for coming onto the show today. And once again, UnitedForBlue.org. They can use your help, and they can certainly use their good wishes. Thanks again for coming on the show, Kelly.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate it.
If you have a gun, you need a safe. If you have valuable heirlooms or jewelry that means something to you, you need a safe. And the best place to get it is Nevada Safes. NevadaSafes.com is the place to look. And it's got the largest selection of safes in Nevada and in the southwestern United States. It's located at 5250 West Charleston. They have all the brands, Liberty, Winchester, Rhino. I can personally attest to their sales and service because I bought my first safe from them. Captain James Dillon, who's a retired Las Vegas Metro Police captain, it's his business, and he runs it really well. If you're looking for a safe anywhere in the southwestern part of the United States, check out NevadaSafes.com. Welcome to Police Story. In this segment of Police Radio, I read a story written by a police officer. And today, I'm going to read a story that I wrote, and it was published in my book called A Cop's Life. This book was my second, and this story is really personal to me. It's a really special story because it had a tremendous effect on my life then as it does today. It's called Her Name Was Jackie. The 4-year-old compact car was stopped at the traffic light. The neon lights from the casinos flashed their staccato rhythm and reflected on the faces of the family in the cool Las Vegas night. Times were getting better for the young couple. Steady work, a small home, and the addition of the little 1-month-old baby, now happily burbling in the infant seat, gave the young family hope that the American dream just might become a reality. They were on their way to the store to pick up some formula and diapers. The new father glanced over to watch as his young wife turned around in her seat to stroke the baby's face with the back of her hand. He smiled as he returned his concentration to the driving and was just about to ease down on the accelerator in anticipation of the light turning green. He had no reason to pay any attention to the lowered primer gray Buick idling next to them. The shaved heads of the two men inside the Buick glistened with sweat, even though the brisk winter nights in Las Vegas had people donning their coats. The cocaine surging through their systems had raised their body temperature and reduced their ability to think or feel. There was no reason to do what they did next. They shared the same ethnic heritage of the young couple, but certainly not their values, not their hopes. Maybe that void was why they chose that moment to raise their 9mm semi-automatics and empty them into the car beside them. The bullets tore into the glass and metal, devastating everything in their path. In the 4-year-old compact, the baby, who moments before had been innocently waving her little arms in the air, enveloped in the warmth and love of parents who adored her, now lay motionless. She was still strapped into her car seat, but now blood was pouring from the horrible gash where the bullet had ripped into her face. The mother screamed as shards of glass imploded into the car, while the father punched the gas pedal in a frantic attempt to escape the fusillade. Without a backward glance, the two gang punks sped off, laughing, proud of the courage it took to indiscriminately open fire on the innocent, not giving a damn. My patrol car glided through the night on a collision course with this family's destiny. I had more than 20 years of experience behind the badge, but this night I would always remember. I was first alerted that something was wrong when I approached the intersection and saw the compact car parked at a weird angle. I noticed the panic, jerky movements of the people surrounding it before I heard a woman screaming. As I climbed out of my unit, I heard someone yell, my God, the baby's been shot. It was then that I saw the infant car seat on the sidewalk next to the car. My flashlight illuminated the tiny face awash with blood, and my heart fell as I saw the little body jerking spasmodically. I was alone on this call, and I needed 3 heads and 10 hands. Who shot her? Were they still nearby? I needed to get medical attention for the baby. Procedure is clear. Summon the paramedics and begin the investigation. But people were shouting, crying, and all I could think of was, I've got to help the baby. I radioed for assistance, but as I knelt beside her, I found she wasn't breathing. Then, as if an answer to a prayer, another patrol car pulled up. It was all instinct after that. I didn't give another thought to procedure. I snatched up the limp and bloody bundle, jumped into the front seat of the new patrol car, and shouted to the young cop to get to the hospital. As I cradled the infant in my arms, I saw that the bullet had inflicted so much damage on her tiny face that she was choking on her own blood and tissue. I scooped out the gory pulp with my fingers, and then, knowing that the baby had no chance of surviving otherwise, I began mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I sealed my mouth over her devastated mouth and nose and began to breathe my life into her little lungs. I prayed between breaths, "Please, little one, please live." The young cop next to me drove like Mario Andretti, without a moment's hesitation. My mission to save this tiny child had become his. We hurtled through the dark streets, the narrow alleys, down neon-lit boulevards as the siren pulsed and the flashing reds and blues reflected off the buildings. I continued to breathe life into the baby's lungs, and in a few moments, or was it a lifetime, I heard the most beautiful sound in the world, a baby crying. I had tempted her back from whatever dark place she had traveled to. I tasted her blood on my lips. In any other circumstances, I would have been repelled by this gory intimacy. But at this moment, I only felt an incredible surge of blessed joy. I believed she'd come back for me. As I held that child and urged her to stay with me through my whispered entreaties, my silent pleas to God, I felt the pull of a bond that could never be torn asunder. My life and that of this tiny girl had collided and meshed in some prophetic way. The trauma team was waiting at the hospital, and I handed off my precious charge to those who would now shoulder the responsibility for her life. They hustled her away. I felt my heart pounding beneath my Kevlar vest. I tasted my tears before I even knew I was crying. I prayed as I silently watched the trauma team work their magic. Maybe those prayers were heard and answered. I looked up and saw the trauma team nurse approaching me, smiling. She said that the little girl was going to make it. She'd need extensive cosmetic surgery in the future to hide the terrible scars that would be a constant reminder of this nightmare come true. I had a last glimpse of the tiny, fragile girl as the masked and scrubs-clad figures huddled over her in the stark light. That image has stayed in my mind. The tragic reality of what had happened would never be clearer than at that moment. As I walked out of the treatment area, I heard an accented voice say, "That's him. That's the one." I turned and saw the young couple whose nightmare I had shared. They ran towards me and thanked me in 2 different languages for saving their baby. It was only then that I learned that her name was Jackie. I had no words. I could only silently wrap my arms around both of them. The mother looked up at me, and seeing her daughter's blood on my face, reached up and touched it wonderingly with the tips of her own fingers. I'll never know what thoughts ran through her mind at that moment. I only know that as her fingers drifted away, her tears ran silently down her cheeks, even as she tried to show her gratitude with a shaky smile. I could feel my own eyes start to burn, so I walked away. And I walked out of the hospital, back into the cool Las Vegas night, back to work. This is End of Watch where we memorialize the men and women of law enforcement who've given their lives in the line of duty. This week, Officer Stephen Smith, who was 54 years of age, of the Columbus Police Department, was shot and killed in the line of duty. He was a 27-year veteran of the police department. He was a SWAT officer, and during a standoff, he was shot and killed. He died today. His end of watch, April 12th, 2016.